It's the Trupany Show with your host, James Trupany.
Hello and welcome to the Trupany Show. My name is James Trupany. This is my show. And once again, we are with New Japan Pro Wrestling and the Dominion Show of last weekend at Osaka Joe Hall, the best name for any wrestling venue on the planet. And to join me today to discuss these great and wondrous things is Mr. Alex Watt of the BBC. How are you, sir?
Hello, I'm very good. To sum up this entire card is just, it's so good! that's my summary there.
You've been excited about this all week, haven't you? This is the thing you've been looking forward to.
Yeah, so much. I was like... Yeah, well, we'll get into that, but it was a bit bloody good, wasn't it?
Also joining us today from WrestleTalk.tv is Mr. Marcus Green of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Yes, I have returned, and the New Japan Pro Wrestling God saw fit to gift me with this great show on my birthday of all days, so excited to talk about it.
Well, there you go. We've got plenty of stuff to talk about today. Fortunately, Chelsea Spellin could not be with us today. She was due to be on the podcast, but she's not feeling very well, so get well soon, Chelsea. Also, speaking of birthdays, today, as we are recording this, is Minoru Suzuki's birthday. We would like to wish the Black Veil a happy, happy birthday. I know this is a discussion earlier. What do you get the man with the worst personality in the world for his birthday?
Space.
Fair enough. Yeah, I think that answer covers everything. So then, Osaka Joe Hall, Dominion, was a supercard of all supercards. Essentially, kind of like SummerSlam. All right, New Japan Pro Wrestling do three really big cards in a year. Wrestle Kingdom is the first one. You have Dominion, and then you have King of Pro Wrestling in the autumn. And everything that happens in between links to those big cards. And this card was really a card of rematches. It was all about matches we've seen before and continuing to tell their stories. And also there was an ongoing theme throughout the show of basic old school wrestling, working a body part. This is not something we've seen from New Japan in a while, but there was good reasons for that in the end, which we'll get to at the end of the show. But the show opened with a dark match, featuring David Finlay captaining Shoto Imunu and Tomiki Oka, who defeated Hirai Kawato, Katsuyu Kitamura, and Tetsuhiro Yagi in 7 minutes and 37 seconds. This was a fun blast. For trivia fans, Shota Umino is Red Shoes Uno's son. He was making his big show debut, actually, or one of his big show debuts on this card. Alex, what did you think of this fun little Young Lions opener?
That's a good factoid as well. I didn't know that. Yeah, well, I like that he was referred to as Showtime, so Shota by Cyrus. if he starts using that nickname when he's IWGP champ in a few years, he should get a payoff. But yeah, it was about what you would expect for these nice, solid work for all the guys who are all improving. Kitamura's physique has somehow got more ridiculous, which I didn't think was possible. That is a big man, and his chops they look horrible. I think he's one to keep an eye on.
Two count from a chop at one point.
Yes, when you get a close near fall off just one chop, that that tells you something, really, doesn't it? And yeah, Dave Finlay is looking really, really good. I said I hope he gets a spot in the G1, but God knows if he will. Like, we keep saying, this guy should get a spot in the G1, and there's probably about 30 guys who should get a spot in the G1 this year. But we will see. He's improved very, very much so just over the last few months alone.
Marcus, what are your thoughts on this match?
Yeah, I echo those sentiments. Obviously, I'm not as familiar with a lot of these guys, but you know, I do think it's a great kickoff for the show. The whole card itself is so strong because you can literally watch this entire card all the way through and have like just great momentum towards obviously the classic at the end. But this was a great showing for those young guys and you know, the Young Lions, they call them. So, you know, like I say, great showing. It kind of blended together a little bit just because a lot of the guys kind of dressed alike, but that didn't take away from the action. So, you know, bright future ahead for those guys.
Yeah, traditional black tights and black boots for the young lions. They're not allowed in. They're not allowed to have a personality officially until they've graduated the dojo. But some of them are showing some certain signs of development. Kawato is still crazy. I'm glad to see he recovered from being killed by Tomohiro Ishii last week. So it's nice
which
to
is
see
saying
back.
Something. Not yes. easy to recover from that.
No.
By the way, I love the fact that it's like they can't have a personality until they graduate the dojo. they just have to be like straight laced until.
Stoic.
Until they're qualified.
Yes.
That's so Japanese wrestling, isn't it?
They do. I mean, within the boundaries they've got, they do try very hard. Kuwota's a good example of that. But yeah, generally speaking, they're not allowed to show any signs of individualism until they've got all the skills together to expel it properly. Okay, then we move on to the actual first match proper, which was Tiger Mask W, Togi Makabe, and Yuji Nagata, who defeated Hiroshi Tenzan, Jushin Thunder Liger, Manabu Nakanishi, and Satoshi Kojima in 7 minutes and 1 second. A fun match, as it is always fun with Tiger Mask W, because he's awesome, and I just love the whole general feel of Tiger Mask W. I'm starting to like Tiger Mask and Tiger Mask W as a tag team now. I kind of hope they get into the G1 Tag League later in the year. That would be really cool. Let's see if Tiger Mask could do a bit of a run in the heavyweight division. That'd be interesting. I'd like to see that. But yeah, fun match. Was there for, you know, employment purposes more than anything else. But did what it said on the tin. What did you think of this, Alex?
Yes, I agree. I like the idea of the Tiger Masks teaming up in the G1 Tag League. I think that's a really good show, because that was... That was kind of one of the big takeaways, was them double teaming guys and seeing the two Tiger Mask guys working together was interesting. I mean, again, it's pretty much what you would expect from one of these, where everyone gets their moment to shine. They're all, you know, pretty much all legends in there. Tiger Mask W on his way to being a legend, shall we say. Perhaps the guy under the mask is a legend already, you could say, but we can neither confirm nor deny. But yeah, Liger was so over as well. Like, even more than I feel like he's been in quite a while, probably because of the Super Juniors run.
Yeah, definitely.
They popped so big for him. And when Tiger Mask W broke up the surfboard, like, the crowd were not happy about that. so it was a fun match. If you were keeping count on the Makabe bump count, I made it 2 bumps in the entire match that he took. I'm probably one, if you could say, because the other one was like him hitting the top rope move.
Marcus, what are your thoughts on this?
Again, same. Obviously, like I said, if you didn't really know the guys in the first match, you certainly knew the ones in this one. Like you said, you know, employment purposes, legends kind of, you know, clashing, if you will. And more than anything, kind of with the Tiger Rats, it kind of reminded me that I really need to get back into the animated show that you so genuinely recommended for me. Like I said, another match that picked up the momentum coming off the first one. So.
Yeah, it was a good bit of fun. And, you know, Tiger Mask W, whoever that is under that mask, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, he was trained well. Anyway, we'll move on.
maybe you've seen it in some other companies. Who knows?
What, like All Japan?
Sure, yeah. That's the one I was thinking of.
So the opening of the gauntlet was Bullet Club versus Chaos, which was Bad Luck Fale, Hangman Page, and Yujihiro Takahashi, with Pieta and a new girl called Shiori. We've got a name for her now. They were defeated by Tomohiro Ishii, Taro Yano, and Yoshihashi as Chaos. The next team to come in was Suzuki-Gun next, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Suzuki-Gun came in as the third team. That was Taichi, Yoshinobu Kanemura, and Zack Sabre Jr. They defeated Chaos, who then went on to face Los Ignorables de Japón, Bushi, Evil, and Sanada, the never openweight six-man tag team champions, who eventually won the match in 18 minutes and 39 seconds. I'm glad I got through that eventually.
I was going to tell you, you missed out Taguchi Japan.
I would say yes, because Taguchi Japan defeated Suzuki-Gun, didn't they? And then it was Los Ignorables. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, straight away, the fact that we're struggling to put this together so much tells you the problem with this match, I think.
There was a lot going on.
Yeah.
Basically, to be straightforward.
Yeah, I almost feel like it was kind of better executed in terms of just how they went about it, but it's just like the order. Yeah, it is kind of confusing, but I feel like I followed the action better when I was actually watching it. Just looking at it off the card here.
Yeah, yeah. Don't read the Wikipedia page. Go and watch the match is my advice after this. Marcus, what did you think of this?
I thought it was some cool stuff. Obviously, like we said, you know, Bullet Club came into this as the world oil machine, I think, and then Lucha Japan kind of took them by surprise, which nobody saw coming, and then they faced off with Suzuki Gun, who they ended up beating, but had sour grapes, so they, you know, worked them over and softened them up for Los Ignorables, and they ended up retaining some a really good action out in between. But like I said, kind of interesting how those teams kind of winded out, because essentially, you know, the team that you thought would be at the end, they weren't, and Japan ended up really kind of, you know, going and hitting that stride, and they could have beaten Los Ignorables, but obviously the beatdown beforehand, it was just too much, and Ignorables is just they're too formidable. A lot of times with these matches, it kind of gets clustery, and we've talked about that before on other shows. Because the Never Open Weight titles have kind of been tossed around a lot since the inception. I think, you know, kind of keeping them on a great tag team like they are now, and, you know, having matches like this where it does tell a better bit of a story other than a cluster. I think it did some really, like I said, some really cool stuff. We got some nice action. And to me, at this point, Sonata can do no wrong. It's been great seeing his transition. So, yeah, great night for those Ignorables.
Yeah, definitely. My personal favorite moment is Zack Sabre Jr. all in black in full Suzuki Gun colors. That was nice. Or Suzuki Gun lack of colors, I should say. That was cool. Alex, what did you think of this?
Yeah, pretty kind of similar, really. I think I'm not a huge fan of these matches. They did one at Wrestle Kingdom as well, and it's like, let's get everyone on the card who we couldn't fit in the other places, and it's kind of like, just, you know, I like all these teams. Pick one. Like, just pick one team to go up against LIJ, and I think it probably would have been better. You know, you've got here a 25-minute match on a card you already know is going to go long because of how you've booked the main event, which we'll obviously talk about later. So I think, yeah, I probably would have preferred it to just be, like, LIJ against maybe Taguchi Japan, but along the way, like you guys have touched on, there was some really good stuff. They kept the crowd invested, which is no small feat when you've got that many teams coming in and out. Like, Zack Sabre Jr. looked awesome. I think he was probably the highlight of the whole thing. He did a lot of cool stuff, like Marcus touched upon, him just being a dick to Juice after they after they got eliminated, and that played really well into the last fall of Juice not being at his best. And I think LIJ and Taguchi Japan, I hope they do that with maybe those three as well, of the Taguchi Japan with Taguchi, Juice, and Ricochet. I thought they had really good chemistry together.
Yeah, definitely.
And yeah, really, it was just the main takeaway from it all was that they kept the belts on the right team. I think you know that my feeling is they should keep those belts for a long time and stop bouncing them around. I think they're the most money. I mean, LIJ are the best stable in Japan at the moment, so you should keep, particularly with what happened later in the card as well, you want to keep the belts on those guys, I think, for as long as possible. So yeah, hopefully, like, I'd like to see LIJ have some matches with Taguchi Japan. I think also with those Suzuki Gun guys would be good as well, but try and do it, you know, one-on-one a bit more, please.
Okay, then we move on to match four, which, believe it or not, was the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championships, which were won by the Young Bucks in 14 minutes and 14 seconds. Being a chaos guy, I wasn't that happy with Rippingi Vice lost, but it was a good match. and the Bucks, being the Bucks and doing their Bucks thing, I don't necessarily think this was as good as the match they had at Wrestle Kingdom, but it was very similar to the match they had at Wrestle Kingdom. This time it was Rocky having to take the beating and Trent having to hold up in his end of the bargain, which he didn't quite manage, but it was a class piece of tag team wrestling. Marcus, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I really like this match. Just because it's one of those matches where, you know, everybody knows the complaints that people have with the Bucks And this wasn't just, you know, super kicks and dives. This, you know, told the story, continuing off of, Wrestle Kingdom, switching it up now, taking out Romero and isolating, Beretta, and kind of, you know, also telling that backstory, like, you know, who's the real weakest link in, Roppongi Vice?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think they kind of continue that, even, watching All Rage a little bit as Beretta is garnering, a new tag team partner, if you will, or trying to. Mm. So, you know, some really great stuff. I mean, who doesn't want to see the Bucks, you know, unleash those, great tag team maneuvers, which they just lambasted Beretta with. And, you know, Beretta put up a hell of a fight. And, you know, at the end, I mean, it's just Bucks once again, thanks for the house. They walk away, just, belted up. And, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, continuing just to tell a story about Roppongi Vice. Obviously they caught hell getting to Wrestle Kingdom to get that win, and now coming back and losing this, just adds more fuel to the fire, depending on how they go with that tag team. So,
yeah, Alex, what did you think of this?
Yeah, I think you guys have touched on the stuff really well there. Like that, I was going to say, of, like the you've got the backstory of Roppongi Vice with the went into the match of who's the weak link and things like that, and are they going to break up and blah blah blah. And like both of you guys touched on, the thing with the Bucks and this one is they did their usual spots, but there was more focused on like a game plan, and they were working on particularly, which played into the finish, Rocky's back and his neck. And then it was sort of a nice way to mix it up with them having that targeted idea. Probably the idea was it shows how important it is to them that they wanted those belts back, and they want to be the top guys, and they want to be the best tag team in the world. And if they don't have the belts, then they can't say that. And everything like that. And like I said, it was a really great match. It told a good story. There were lots of clever callbacks to the match they had at Wrestle Kingdom. I agree, it was probably a shade below what they did at Wrestle Kingdom, but yeah, it was still a great match. And I thought Trent came out of it looking really good, because of he gave a really good babyface performance while he was being the isolated guy in the match for so long. I guess the other thing is, like, are they bouncing the belts around still too much? But it wasn't something that really bothered me, because I think it plays into the larger story of both that both teams are doing.
Yeah, I mean, this story really started at Dominion last year. You know, it's taken a year for us to get to this point with this story with Roppongi Vice. So I think they're taking it slowly, and the fact that they managed to filter them out to being the worst team in the division to being the best team in the division, they told that story so they can move on and tell the next part of the story. I think it was okay myself. I can agree with you. Those belts have moved around a lot, but not much this year, because this is the first, we're 6 months in and they've changed hands twice. So that's not too bad.
Yeah, that's kind of my take on it. I think maybe last year or the year before they were bouncing them around far too much, but now it's like a couple of title changes is not bad when it's playing into a larger story, like you say, of what they, where, what direction both teams are going in.
Yeah,
and I think kind of like what we were talking about with the last match, they've done well with this. You were talking about with the six man, they've done well with the, you know, the IWGP junior heavyweight tag straps, about keeping it like two teams. Like, you don't need that multi-man car crash that we usually tend to get a lot of times on these shows. Great to watch, but it was kind of run by the numbers, you know, paint by the numbers, if you will. And you kind of knew where it was going. And they might flip the belts back and forth, but, you know, it was far better executed with just two teams. And like you said, it kind of told that story, working Romero's back and even bringing that to the end with the submission victory. So, you know, if they can keep it like that, I think going forward, that would be great. And kind of taking that idea, like Alex said, and moving that to the six-man, will be another great step too.
Okay, then we move on to the next tag team title match, which was for the IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team Championship. War Machine were defending against Gorillas of Destiny, and Gorillas of Destiny take their second championship in 10 minutes and 43 seconds. This was pretty dang good, and Gorillas of Destiny have really grown on me this year, as you probably heard me talk about, but this was as good as it gets in tag team wrestling at the moment, heavyweight tag team wrestling. War Machine have been great champions. Kind of sad to see them lose the belts, but Gorillas of Destiny have certainly earned their spot as the top dogs in New Japan as far as tag team wrestling is concerned at the moment. Marcus, what are your thoughts on this?
I wholeheartedly agree. And as a huge fan of the Gorillas of Destiny, I almost wanted to get some wall paint myself just so I could feel like I got on par with these guys. You know, I think much like Elgin when he came to New Japan, I think War Machine and Ring of Honor kind of felt like the rabbit chasing the carrot thing. We kind of enjoyed the chase more when they finally got the carrot. He was happy for him, but it didn't necessarily have the same spark as the chase did. So them coming to New Japan, I think it's been great, and the crowd has really warmed up to him. But the Gorillas of Destiny, you know, I've been a fan of these guys since they came together, and seeing Micah evolve the way he has and clicking with his brother the way he has, and just those guys' chemistry, and great shirt, by the way, for Tom Kaloa. That was a great shirt. But, yeah, just the way those guys, you know, executed that game plan of just kind of pummeling War Machine, because you can't let those guys get any kind of momentum. You're just not going to be able to recover from it. So, and what a great move that was. Tonga countering that pop-up power slam into a gun stun. That was sweet.
Yeah.
Just great stuff from these two tag teams. Looking forward to see them clash again. And, you know, it's a Gorillas of Destiny's win, so it's good for me.
Alex, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, Marcus beat me to that on the spot, because I thought that spot was tremendous. Like, one of the best spots of the entire show, like, countering that power slam, pop-up power bomb, whatever it was, into the gun stun was awesome. I thought it was a very good match. Probably would have been even better without the finish, actually, with the ref bump and the chair thing, because it was very... They were chugging along at a very nice pace. It was like 10 minutes of just balls-to-the-wall action with four big dudes just beating the crap out of each other, basically, with Hansen's mental athleticism thrown in, which always like surprises me, I think, when I see it. I think the idea of the finish was obviously they can now play into a rematch and probably have a rivalry going into maybe even extend it to Wrestle Kingdom, because I think they've got really good chemistry, these two teams. So
yeah,
it was a nice piece of work.
I can say War Machine are so over as well in Japan. So it would be a nice story to get back to, I think, if they get back to that. And again, we've got Real World Tag League in December. Real World Tag League is All Japan. Sorry. The G1 Tag League in December. So, yeah, that's something to look forward to, depending on what teams we have where. All right, then. We move on to Cody, who defeated Michael. I can't just call him Cody. It's just wrong. There's not enough there. There's no substance.
Cody. No surname.
Cody, no surname. Cody Runnels defeated Michael Elgin in 11 minutes and 53 seconds in a match that was all right. It was the best one Cody's had so far in New Japan, I think.
Undoubtedly, yeah.
Yeah, it was all right. Did what it said on the tin. 10 minutes and 43 seconds. Yeah, it was okay. Alex, what did you think of this?
Pretty much that, to be fair. It's definitely... definitely the best match of Cody's run, which was important if they are going to set him up to challenge for the title, which I believe is the plan for the US. We'll talk about that probably more in a bit. But it was solid. It wasn't anything incredible, but I think Michael Elgin was a good choice to get a good match out of him. I think they had decent chemistry. The thing that surprised me is why Cody's not really been working with the Japanese guys that much, I think is going to change now, but it's strange that they've had him with the Gaijin so much when he's in Japan.
It's a protection job, I think, partly, because I don't know, you know, I'd kind of like to see him in there with Ishii or Makabe, and to see, like, Makabe's kind of like, with the want of a better term, expandable to an extent. You know, he'll have a good run in the G1, but he's not going to be running for a championship in the next 2 months. So he could stand a loss. You could build him up with him. But I feel
we might even have talked about this on another podcast. I'm not sure, but it's like you've got those legends there. Yeah. Like Nagata's another one. You could do. You know, I think he'd be a good foil for Cody. Like it's strange that they've not really used them in that way. Which it seems like that's almost the reason for them being there now. To help build up these guys. So, yeah.
Marcus, your thoughts?
Yeah, solid affair. Like you guys said, as a Cody fan, it was cool to see him again on a big stage in Japan. And obviously, I think going into this, he said he wanted bigger, more stiffer competition. And Elgin certainly fixed that to a T. So, you know, like you said, probably one of his best showings, if not his best showing, since he's coming to Japan. And obviously, Mr. Reynolds has some big shows coming up, specifically in Ring of Honor, so he kind of needed all the momentum he got off this show.
Yeah, I think that pretty much sums it up, really. It's just kind of another... It felt like just another stepping stone in the career of Cody Rhodes, not necessarily... It felt a bit of an odd fit on this card. It was the only kind of, like, skip to beat with this particular match. It wasn't bad or anything, it just didn't seem like it was of this universe, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think it was well-placed on the card, though, before all the big stuff that was coming after it.
Yeah, as palate cleansers go, it was just about right.
Mm.
Speaking of which, the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship was defended by Hiromu Takahashi against the Best of Super Juniors champion, Kushida, in 19 minutes and 12 seconds. I will not stop a man having his moments. Marcus Green, your thoughts.
Oh, the glorious song is playing in my head right now. Yeah, it was, you know, it's all roads lead to Kushida. You know, he points to his wrist all the time. And, you know, for the time, and it's his time right now. You know, he is Best of Super Juniors, current Ring of Honor World Television Champion. And now IWGP Junior Heavyweight. Great, phenomenal match. I mean, I think Takahashi is one of those guys who's grown on me. I mean, just, I think this, you know, feud in general with Kushida is probably my second favorite of his, of course, behind Dragon Lee, who just, I mean, those guys literally try to kill each other every single match. But, you know, this is another guy that he could fight forever with, and this was probably one of my favorite matches of the night, of course, barring the main event, of course. But, yeah, as a junior heavyweight fan of all these guys, you know, this was a, you know, great showing. And like you said, but, you know, coming off that kind of, you know, keen in the middle match coming off of Cody and Elgin, this was a great, great momentum shift for the show. I'm really proud of Kushida and everything he's got going on right now. He deserves it. So
I gotta say, you know, we talked about the spot of the card possibly being Tamatonga's cutter. However, I gotta say that drop kick into the crowd in this match was absolutely ridiculous.
Yes, it was.
It was just a shotgun drop kick, which literally looked
a true
like
highlight if I ever saw one.
It literally looked like Hiromu was going to land in the third row. It was just ridiculous. And also, just like Kushida's relentlessness at going after Hiromu's arm was just beauty. And if you like, people complain that wrestling isn't like it used to be. This is exactly like it used to be. This thing here, this, come watch this. This is it. Okay? It's done with a modern twist. There's lots of flippy stuff. However, the basic principles is no different to what wrestling was like in the 1960s. It was absolute genius. I loved this match. Alex Watt, what did you think of it?
I agree with that. This was tremendous. Like, second best match of the night for me. It's the best match these two have had in their series. And like you say, the work on the arm, just the story, that there was so much that went into this, like in the background, and they've built so well. They were calling back to their other matches. Obviously, the idea being that Hiromu's had Kushida's number. Kushida, you know, they hate each other. Kushida's had to change his style. He's had to get more aggressive to take this guy on and actually be able to beat him, particularly after the quick loss after Kushida losing in the last one. The story of the Super Juniors was obviously Kushida building himself back up, which is classic New Japan booking. And yeah, the pace they went at for the start of the match, which was partly to play off that quick loss from the previous match, but also just the hatred between them. It was just so good. Like, you don't see that a lot in the junior heavyweight division. This was they just forearmed each other and chopped each other for like 3 minutes, which was really good, like completely different to what would normally happen in these matches, and really sold the story behind the match that they are not big fans of one another. And yeah, like you say, some of the spots were just nuts, and like down the stretch, stuff where they just like were like punching each other in the face, like, and in the throat, and then the curb stomps, that was what I was going to say, where Kushida started stomping him, and the crowd actually booed it because It's like, oh, we don't like seeing good guys do this. Like, but it was so like, Kushida was like, has to be so aggressive to beat this guy. He was so determined. He's going to make him tap out. He's going to work that arm and he's going to get the hoverboard lock in. It was so well done. And it was genuinely surprising to see Hiromu tap out because of the character they built him as, of him basically being impervious to pain. So it meant something when he tapped out. It was just really well done. It's everything you want from a match like this, like a culmination of a rivalry, how cleverly it was put together.
Yeah, just really, really well done. I can't recommend this match enough. If you don't watch the whole card, you have to watch this match.
Should say, obviously the story had to end with Kushida winning. I hope Hiromu isn't going to move back down the card because he's been the breakout guy this year. And I really hope he stays near the top of the card because he's been such a breath of fresh air. And I mean, they can wrestle every month if they're going to put out matches like this, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, you've got King of Pro Wrestling. That's the next thing. You've got Super J Cup. That's the next thing in that. Are they both going to be in that? Because usually they tend to have like four New Japan guys and four guys from around Japanese wrestling. So there's, you know, you could have one from each stable. So yeah, we'll see what happens, really.
It's interesting now as well that Bushi's going to be the next challenger for Kushida, judging by the post-match stuff. So that's interesting as well for the Bushi Hiromu. Is there going to be friction there and things like that? There's a lot of stuff you can do with that as well.
Yeah, which is unusual for a New Japan faction. It's kind of like the forbidden matches. You don't have like Chaos guys versus Chaos guys or Los Ignorables guys versus Los Ignorables. But Los Ignorables, they've approached that faction completely differently to any other faction they've ever produced. So they can play around with the rules of how a faction works. And speaking of factions, the next match was all about factions. It was Minoru Suzuki defending his never open weight championship against Hiroki Goto in a lumberjack death match for the heavyweight championship. Now, the rules of this, we tried to figure out what the rules were last week, and we were nearly
we
there.
Did.
I was right to say that the lumberjacks were made up of Suzuki Gun and Chaos members. They were. But for the record, that was El Desperado, Taka Michinoku, Yoshinobu Kanemura, and Zack Sabre Jr. for Suzuki Gun. And it was Jado, Tomohiro Ishii, Toru Yano, and Yoshihashi for Chaos. And arguably, Yoshihashi had the spot of the match in this as well, because he did an incredible dive onto all the guys in the ringside. But this was a cracking match. I really enjoyed this. Even with the bells and whistles, Minoru Suzuki is just awesome. He's just brilliant. I just love the guy to death, and I love Goto as well. This was just so well done, such a good match. It kind of like, if it had been on any other card, it would have been the best match of the night. But because it wasn't, and it was slotted into four fantastic matches, it was like a good match in the last four run. So I'll ask Alex, what did you think of this?
I think you liked it a lot more than I did.
Okay then.
It was all right. but maybe like you say, it is because it was slotted in between like three match of the year candidates, which really probably did hurt it. But for me, I was just kind of like expecting more from those two guys. Like, I love Suzuki as well, and whatever happens, he's still got the most over music in the business this side of Glorious. So, I think the interference and stuff hurt it for me. I wasn't such a big fan of that. But it had good heat with the crowd. But for me, it just kind of felt a bit like a cool down before the big two matches.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm being a bit pessimistic on that, didn't leave much of an impact on me that much, apart from Suzuki and Liger's confrontation, which was amazing, and the crowd popped so big for that.
Yeah, they did, yeah. I think possibly one of the reasons why I liked it more than you did is because it's a lumberjack match, so interference was supposed to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's probably the reason why I was like, oh, this is cool. This is actually what's supposed to happen. So I don't know. Marcus, what did you think of this?
Oh, it's funny. It's like I'm sandwiched in between you two guys' feelings about it. Like Alec, the interference kind of, you know, took away from it. But, you know, to Dane's point, that was kind of the point. And because I watched WWE so much, the lumberjack concept has been so bastardized to me that, you know, I kind of had to step back and take, you know, into account that this was actually lumberjacks that, you know, were important and catered to the match as opposed to just random guys who wouldn't get on the card anyway surrounding the ring. so, you know, that was cool. Just seeing the heat between, like you said, those two factions. Obviously, I would like to see Suzuki and Goto, because I'm a Goto guy. I would like to see them kind of, you know, square off without any interference. But, you know, it was good. Obviously, I think I like the IWGP match before that better, but this was unique in its own way, and it's very hard to make matches like that feel, like I said, unique, because we've seen it so many times in other places and haven't meant anything. So for them to do it, you know, kind of speaks to Japan's, you know, ability to make these factions matter and to make the fuse with the matter even more. So
okay then. Right then. Then we move on to
Sorry. I guess it's Yoshihashi next for Suzuki, like, which will be interesting. Do you think they are gonna do Ishii against Suzuki at Wrestle Kingdom, and that's gonna be the placeholder until then?
That would work, because it's like the reverse of the Toriyano feud with Suzuki Gun. Toriyano 2 years ago had a feud with Suzuki Gun, and he started with Suzuki and then went all his way through Suzuki Gun. So kind of makes sense that Suzuki would go all his way through Chaos. So start with Okada, go to Goto, then go down to Yoshihashi, come back up to Ishii. I'm, you know, just thinking in Chaos hierarchy, because obviously the most important man in Chaos is Toriyano. But, yeah, I think that would make sense if you end up with Ishii for the big match, because then Tomohiro's had a year off, more or less, resting up, not doing the big matches, apart from the big one he had with Kenny Omega. He's been resting in tag team matches. He's probably going to have a ludicrous G1 run where he damages himself, let's be honest. But, you know.
Oh, almost certainly, yeah.
but in the run up to that, he can have a kind of an easy year and then build up to another run with his title, the man who put the belt on the map. So, yeah, I think it's him. Okay, then we move on to the semi final. Hiroshi Tanahashi successfully defeated Tetsuya Naito for the IWGP Intercontinental Heavyweight Championships, 25 minutes and 56 seconds. And like I would not deny a man his moment, I cannot deny a man his commiseration. Alex Watt, your thoughts?
Oh, poor Naito. But God, these two are good at wrestling, aren't they? I know that's not exactly new information, but they're just gold every time they wrestle. I think this was probably not quite as good as their Wrestle Kingdom match, sort of the reverse of Hiromu and Kushida, but it was near as damn it as good, like, and it was so well laid out and paced, which is what you expect from these two, a lot of story going into it. Again, so much respect for Tanahashi, worked it with a torn bicep, it's just such, you know, such a workhorse, and like, I mean, it obviously played really big into the match. And what have I got written here? Of course, Tanahashi jumped in before the bell, which is really interesting. Didn't let him get his gear off and sort of play the mind games that Naito always plays, which is really clever. Shows how much they hate each other, like how much Naito's got under his skin, how much it's annoyed Tanahashi that he sort of disrespected the title and things like that. It was what we knew it was going to be amazing, and it was amazing. And the interesting part was the finish, I guess, that Naito tapped out, which I don't think anyone saw coming.
No, not at all.
Which was a really, really interesting way to do it. They'll both go in again to the G1 as two of the favourites, as they always do. But especially Naito, I think, now that he's dropped the belt, people will be like, he's one of the front runners for winning that tournament now.
Do you think we're ever going to get bored of watching these two wrestle?
No.
I don't think we are either. This was great. It just just everything you expect New Japan to be about, honor for the championship, honor for the belt, or complete disrespect as far as NATO is concerned, but he does it in a loving way. And this is this is brilliant. I just absolutely love this match. And, you know, you can't say enough about it in one sense. And again, it's one of those things, it was brilliant, but there was something else that was more brilliant to come. But we'll get to that in a moment. Marcus Green, what do you think of this match?
Echo you gentlemen's sentiments about it. And as a guy who has not necessarily clicked, I mean, I get exactly how great Naito is. He just doesn't click as a character for me. But, you know, but as like Tanahashi, as a guy who is not necessarily a fan of the whole disrespecting of the belt, specifically because it's New Japan, and we know just how much things matter with New Japan, specifically all their titles. But, you know, again, like the Kushida match, telling that whole story of, you know, the ace, you know, living up to the name of the ace, because like you said, a torn bicep and everything, but really making it a point to stick it to Naito and like, look, man, I'm the ace. You've disrespected this title and this company for far too long. I've been the standard bearer, and I'm going to put you in your place. And, you know, coming off of the Naito thing about them kind of introducing that U.S. belt and him going like, hey, man, you're not going to do that on my watch. So it's like great stuff on both sides. And then, you know, just the execution of the match. And this, again, speaks to the execution that New Japan entails, when how many times it feels like we've said, are we ever going to get tired of these two or these four guys going at it? So so you can't really say enough good stuff about, you know, really, to be honest, like you, like I said, you can go back and watch this card all the way through, but specifically these last four matches, you know, it's just, again, excellent execution on the part of New Japan, and these guys are going to do some great stuff once again in the G1.
Okay, then. We move on to the main event of the evening. Kazuchika Okada successfully defended the IWGP Heavyweight Championship in a 60-minute time limit draw with Kenny Omega, which has already been marked as 6.25 stars by Big Dave Meltzer. This was something special. This was going above and beyond the call of duty of a professional wrestler, to be honest with you. However, it wasn't as dangerous as the match they had at Wrestle Kingdom. It was a lot safer. They did a lot more stuff. There was a lot more layers and a lot more storytelling. And just, this is a little story about how surprising a one-hour draw is in this day and age. A couple of years ago, I was flicking around on the Voices of Wrestling Twitter, and they were saying, you know, there was rumors that Okada versus Tanahashi was going to go for an hour, and someone said, there is no way in the modern wrestling industry any match should ever go for an hour. It would not be entertaining, even in New Japan. They couldn't do it. Well, boys, you were wrong. This was absolutely stunning. And one other thing, I was talking to one of my students yesterday who's also a WWE fan. He's a big wrestling fan. He's telling me him and his friends are having a party this weekend for Money in the Bank. And I said, you need to watch the main event at Wrestle Kingdom. And he said, what happened? It was an hour-long draw. And he went, what? They both got counted out or something? I went, no, they have time limits. They went for an hour. The idea of a time limit draw is such an alien concept to wrestling fans these days. And it was great to see it done. I never thought I'd be happy to see a draw, but I was incredibly happy to see a draw, because the belt stays on a card, and that's where it should be, damn it. Marcus Green, what do you think of this match?
Okay, let me start on my brain, see what I can come up with. you say so many times that, you know, how often can, you know, we ever get tired of seeing these guys fight, or, you know, can't say enough good stuff about this match. We really can't about this match. We're going to try. We're trying, but, you know, it's really, you have to go back and watch these guys. Really need to watch both of their matches, because, you know, that's, you know, the beauty of it. And it's so hard to come back after the match that they had and tell any sort of story for, you know, over an hour. But, you know, they did it. And like you said, it was less dangerous. It, you know, was more focused, obviously. Omega kind of worked over the leg, and I've heard some people complain about that, that necessarily wasn't a factor going towards the end of the match. But I mean, you go back and watch the match, that's literally nitpicking.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, but for them to do what they did and kind of tell that, because the first match was really Omega having all the momentum in the world coming against, you know, probably the best wrestler in the world, and kind of throwing everything in the kitchen sink at the guy. literally, and just not really being able to hit that proverbial coup de grace, if you will, with the one wing angel, and then coming into this match, and you see Okada like, okay, I can't let happen what happened last time. I got to put this guy away early. Seeing him really trying to get that that clothesline off, you know, early, and then, you know, just Omega finding every counter in the world, and then Okada doing the same with the one wing angel, and then him finally being able to hit it, but it wasn't enough, and you know, it was just topsy turvy. The dragon suplex attempts were ridiculous. So, you know, at the by the end of it, like you said, you weren't never been so happy to see a draw just because you just wanted these guys to rest almost. Like it was insane. But this was a perfect, you know, roller coaster out of a match through every emotion, feeling, move you could think of. And like you retweeted on Twitter about Okada being the best in the world. I mean, if you have a list of top two or three guys in the world and Okada's not in it, you either deaf, dumb, blind, or all three. Like the guy the run he's been on has been insane. For him to keep up this level of consistency in the Shark Tank that is New Japan is something truly to be commended. And for the fact that these guys put on these two matches and there's still potential for a third one is insane.
Yeah, yeah. This is like, we will never get bored of watching these two wrestle ever. Ever. Alex, what did you think of this match?
It's all right. where do you even start with this? Like, they had possibly the best match ever, some were saying. How do you top that? Like, and then they go and do this. Like, it was just unbelievable. Like, to do a 60-minute draw, but to do a 60-minute draw, a New Japan 60-minute draw, like the pace they were moving at as well.
Yeah,
Like it never seemed like it was going an hour to me. Like, I mean, I felt a bit silly afterwards because I was like, that actually makes a lot of sense that they would do a 60-minute draw, but they were arguably working a faster pace than the first match, like in the beginning. So there was no way I thought they were going to go the full 60. Like, the closest I can think is, and you'll like this reference, Manami Toyota and Kyoko Inoue.
That's
the closest I could do it for, like, going at a pace for 60 minutes. Because you look at, like, CM Punk and Samoa Joe's famous match, for instance. It's very deliberate, the pace they're keeping for the first half hour. And then they pick it up for the second half hour. This was, like, balls to the wall stuff. All in them telling the story of it, and then it played into like the last 10 minutes where they were exhausted and desperately trying to cling on and desperately trying to win. But it was so well done. You could believe that it could have ended at any point before the time limit as well, because the first match went 46 minutes, because New Japan's had a match before that ended in 59 minutes. Back with Tenzin and Kojima, I believe. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was unbelievable. Like, people will probably argue for the rest of time over whether their first one was better or this one was better. Just the fact that they could even equal that first match is insane. Like, the spots in it, like we say, the storytelling was incredible. And, you know, if you're going to nitpick, like Marcus said, you'd say about the leg, there were a couple of things where you could see there were maybe stalling a little bit, like when Okada hit the multiple rainmakers and he was clearly stalling for Bullet Club to come out. But I thought the Bullet Club bit was really well done. Initially it was like, oh no, don't do some shenanigans ending to this, but then the way they did it was so clever and just gave them a little bit of a breather until they went into the final mental closing stretch. Stuff like, I'm just going to list spots now because there were so many of, like, you know, Omega countering the dropkick into the powerbomb was insane. The dragon suplex teasers, the Omega showboating, doing the gun thing, and then Okada grabbing his arm and hitting the Rainmaker. You had the table stuff, Omega's moonsault off the top. When you start going through it, you're like, the stuff they did in this hour. And the best one of all, like, well, also the one-winged angel thing, it's worth saying, was so well done with him getting his foot on the ropes and them that storytelling, like you said with Takahashi and Kushida, that's something that meant something because he literally hadn't hit it on Okada in one of these matches. Yeah. So when he hit it, everyone bought that that was the finish. And then it wasn't. And then he got his foot on the ropes and it was amazing. And yeah, the spot of the entire show was Omega dodging the Rainmaker, for lack of a better term, just by collapsing.
Yeah.
That was so well done. Because Okada literally just missed him and put so much force into it that he went flying across the ring, and it was like so believable that something like that would happen, you know, in a match like this. There's not enough superlatives for these two guys, really, is there? And no. Like you guys both touched on with Okada, this is one of the greatest title reigns of all time. I don't see how anyone could even say otherwise at this point. He's had the belt for a year, and you look at the title defense he's had, like this year alone, but when you go back to when he won the belt off Naito, when he had that incredible match with Marufuji, which I think you said was your favorite match of last year.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this is all within this title reign. This is like Kobashi Mizawa stuff that he's doing. And I hope people are realizing what an incredible wrestler they're watching now.
As well as the first match with Marufuji in the G1, the non-title match in the G1 with Ishii, the other Tanahashi match in the G1. Yeah. You know, this is... His G1 run alone was a classic by itself, and he didn't get to the semi-finals.
Yeah, exactly. Like, how many classic matches, match of the year candidates, has he had in just this 1 year title reign?
And he's had, I was going to say, he's had two fantastic matches with Bad Luck Fale in that time period. You know, and that's a lot. Mm-hmm. That's no knock on Bad Luck Fale, who's come along leaps and bounds. But 2 years ago, it's not something I wanted to see, even when they were feuding together. You know, he's been...
Yeah, I said, like, his match with Fale, some people were... I couldn't understand why people were not as impressed by it. I thought that was tremendous. Like,
yeah, yeah.
His title defense against Fale, like, he's done the thing that great champions do, where you work against all these different guys and you make them all look amazing, and it's all going to play into this ultimate story of how long, because he's clinging onto the belt at this point because he's having these insane matches with everyone, and it's getting tougher for him to beat these guys, which was literally the case here. He couldn't beat him, like,
yeah,
and that all plays into a larger overarching story of his title reign as a whole, which is what New Japan also does brilliantly.
And also, there is a couple of other layered points in here. Halfway through this match, if you haven't seen it already, sorry to spoilers, but you probably shouldn't be listening to this podcast anyway. Cody Rhodes and the rest of Bullet Club come down to throw in the towel for Kenny because they thought he was worn out. And I think this was about the 50-minute mark, wasn't it? Kenny refused to have the towel thrown in. The Young Bucks were trying to persuade Cody not to do it. And eventually, Kenny got his win back, asked for the towel, and wiped his face. The same towel he dropped in the ring when Okada challenged him, what, a month ago? Okada wouldn't give him the towel back. You know, all these little intricacies, but that plays into what's happened next. And what's happened next is Cody Runnels has challenged Kazuchika Okada in the US on the G1 Climax Tour, which will be happening in Los Angeles and California in the G1 Climax Series. So they've kind of already built a main event. They've got the G1 lined up nice as it can possibly be, I think, for wrestling fans the world over to see. This is going to be one hell of a special summer. And also, we've next got to ask the question, who's the next challenger for Okada? Now we're thinking about King of Pro Wrestling. Now we're thinking about the next title defense or the next major title defense we're going to see. They've got us thinking that far ahead, just like the way they book that far ahead. So this has been absolutely special for New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Well, I think everyone's thinking that Wrestle Kingdom now, they've got to do Okada and Omega again. Whether they do, we'll find out. But if that's the way they're going to go, how do they get there? Who wins the G1? Like, those guys, alongside Naito, like, I would say those three are the favourites to win the G1 now. But there's so many ways you could you could go with it. Does does Omega win them back to back? Become, I don't think, one of the first back to back winners of the G1 anyway. Yeah. And then, or does, you could argue we have Okada win it as champion and then call out Omega again. There's a lot of ways they could go with it.
Yeah, yeah. This is interesting. We'll not call for G1 predictions just yet, because we've got the whole month to think about that before we start looking at G1 Climax. Marcus, what's your overall thoughts of this entire card?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I just think this was a great gift. Thank you, New Japan, for like I said, delivering this show on my born day. Just talking about it with you guys is just making me want to go back and watch the whole show all the way through, specifically that last half. I mean, like you said, the deliver what they did at the end, coming off of two matches that are potential, you know, matches of the year ahead of it is just phenomenal. But again, it just speaks to how, you know, thorough New Japan is. So, you know, I'm just looking forward to going back and watching some of these matches, and for them to even have a show, for them to kick off the year almost every year with the best show and then come to the summer and deliver another best show of the year is just phenomenal. So thank you, New Japan.
Alex, what's your thoughts, closing thoughts on this particular card?
Yeah, the same. Like, it's one of the best shows of the year, unquestionably. It's as good as, if not better than, Wrestle Kingdom, and Wrestle Kingdom was the best show of the year, so that tells you how good this was. And yeah, probably have to watch all the top matches again. I want to watch Okada and Omega both matches back to back now, probably. When I can make that time commitment.
Like I say, that's a Sunday, that just, is, yeah.
Yeah, that's a full Sunday. But like after watching that match, like I think I tweeted out about it, it's like this is a really incredible period for like Japanese wrestling. Like, people should be making the most of it. Like, the amount of 5-star classics that New Japan have put out this year, like, we're in double figures and it's June, like, it's, and the G1's still to come.
Yeah, just to give you a thing, bear this in mind, New Japan Pro Wrestling is one company. We talk about New Japan because it's probably the most accessible for Western fans to watch. All Japan Pro Wrestling is doing fantastic business. They've more or less doubled their fan base from 12 months ago. You know, Dragon Gate are doing fantastic business. They've always been very consistent. The Joshi promotions are doing more business now than they have done in 15 years. Sendai Girls, Stardom, Oz Academy, they're filling arenas again. This is a very special time for Japanese pro wrestling. You are in the middle of it. It does not get any better than this, folks. Don't waste it. Find this stuff. Watch this stuff. We strongly encourage you to do, because this is the best wrestling on the planet right now.
Mm-hmm. And it's like a fiver a month to get New Japan World. Like, it's you should do it. Get New Japan World.
Okay, that pretty much wraps us up for today on our Dominion review. This has been the Troopany Show with me, James Troopany. You can find me on Twitter at Sheriff Lone Star. You can find Alex Watt of the BBC at AlexWatt187 on Twitter. Thank you for your time today, sir.
That's all right. Yeah, follow me for 6.25 star tweets all the time.
But there's been some stick about that this week. You know, it's like, all right, Dave liked it. Move on. There are other things to worry about.
I mean, on that, like, he'd kind of backed himself into a corner. because you give the first one 6 stars and then you say the second one's better. Like, I mean, what was he supposed to do? Like, he'd given the first one that many, he had to, if he thinks the second one's better, he has to give that one more.
Yeah, like, recalibrate.
And,
then,
you know.
Yeah.
They were that good. So, like, anyone who's moaning too much about it, like, ultimately, it's a star rating system. Like, it's not the be-all and end-all. At the end of the day, they are two unbelievable matches. So just go and watch them, basically.
Yeah, it's all subjective, people. All subjective.
Yes, and speaking of the man himself, Mr. Marcus Green, who is at Paradox Kid on Twitter, thank you very much for your time today, sir.
Yes, thank you. Tremendous to be finally returned to the show for this show of all shows. And a quick shout-out to Yujiro for, once again, that entrance. So.
All right then, thank you very much for listening to us today. You can listen to us on the WrestleTalk Podcast Network. Please do listen for The Squash with Gavin Duenas and Ben Spindler. They are back and they are talking about wrestling. I assume this week they will be doing a a review. Well, they might not be because it's the week ahead, isn't it? It's Money in the Bank this weekend, so they might not get a chance to review Money in the Bank before the podcast goes up. So we'll see what they come up with this week. But last week's top five best and worst Money in the Bank matches, well worth a listen if you're looking for something else to listen to of your Monday after this. Thank you for your time today. Take care, and we'll see you next week when we're back with a beginner's guide to Japanese wrestling. We'll be looking at 1992. Take care. Bye.